It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line is the managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion, Roger Whittle. And Roger, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
Well, South Dakota officials are predicting roughly $4.6 million in higher revenues for the current budget year than estimates lawmakers adopted during the legislative session. And last week, Governor Dugard announced that the state ended the last budget year with a surplus for the fourth consecutive year. The governor said the state had higher revenues and lower than anticipated spending. John, do you think the budget surplus and higher revenues could help with such calls to such as boosting teacher pay in the state?
Well, I think it might contribute to it. It's certainly not the only factor, but this summer task force this is working on it, plus I think a renewed urgency in this. It may not necessarily be just the $4.6 million, or it's actually a little larger than that, the surplus, because of some expenses that came in below estimate. But I think it does indicate if you can exceed your budget numbers for four consecutive years, then maybe you've got a little bit extra that can be used to contribute to that issue.
Well, Roger Whittle, what do you think the news on the higher revenues and the budget surplus will add to the debate over teacher pay?
Well, I think when you're talking boosting teacher pay, this is the amount of the deficit would be just kind of a drop in the bucket. I think the last I read the budget, the surplus was about $20 million. Every $10 million of money would give the teachers in the state a $1,000 raise. I think there's about 10,000 teachers in the state. So these teachers would need a $5,000 a year raise to get to 48th in the nation. So we're talking $50 million just to do that. So I don't think the budget deficit is the answer to the teacher situation, but I think it will cause the state to be a little less conservative in their budgeting forecast. When you are consistently coming up with extra money, I think it'll change the way they work the numbers. But there's an awful lot of people would have their eyes on that extra money.
So what happens with debate over future projects with eye on that extra money, John?
Well, I think you'll see all sorts of people asking about that and for their causes. But I think you'll discover that this education and teacher pay would generally rise to the top of the list. I mean, if they talk about, more to, now we've kind of worked on the highway thing already, but if they talk about other state government issues that could draw on that money, I think they'll probably have to get in line.
What about something like Medicaid expansion, Roger? I know that that's been discussed particularly by Democrats, but I don't think it really made it to the top of any discussions during this year's legislative session. Do you think anything happens with that?
Well, it might, but again, there's a lot of people would want that money. And let's not forget, this legislature has the option of giving more tax relief with that extra money. So there's a long list of things that it could be used for. Which one winds up being, or which combination of them is yet to be seen.
Yeah, the concept of tax relief sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. We talk about what to do with that money. Do you think, John, that tax relief will be under discussion?
I don't. I think South Dakota is a favorable tax climate, and from a lot of different standpoints, I don't see or I don't hear about any groups rallying behind and decrease in taxes. I think I think all the direction would be in the expense side.
Well, moving on from finances, last week Attorney General Marty Jackley released the text of a proposed initiated constitutional amendment that would create an independent redistricting commission to draw the boundaries for legislative boundaries. Legislative districts and enough people signed the petition, then the proposed amendment would go on the 2016 ballot. Roger, would this take away the power to draw district boundaries from legislators?
It would. They want to take it away from the lawmakers and put it into an independent commission. Right now, I think 37 states use their lawmakers to draw these districts. And it's also, in most states, of course, they also draw the congressional districts, but our congressional district is pre-drawn. It's the border of the state.
Not a problem.
That's not a problem for them. But I think there are only six states that do it with an independent commission. This is kind of an interesting issue. I had not heard that our legislative district drawing had been a problem, but apparently I believe it's the Farmers Union has come out with this proposal, and they're saying that there's problems with the way we do it now, and it's causing unfair representation, and they want something done about it, and they've been pretty adamant about it.
Well, John Hunter, and this is something that Bob Mercer pointed out in his blog, since the commissioners would be chosen by the State Board of Elections, which is a creation of the legislature, would the commission be truly independent and nonpartisan?
Probably not. I think it would still be under the influence of legislature, but it'd probably be less so than if it's as it is today. I think, and then there's another factor. I fully agree with what Roger's saying on some of these details of this, but also I think you have to throw in the American Civil Liberties Union, which is always, not always, but it seems like they're always suing on behalf of some group that's being underrepresented in this districting process, especially Native Americans in certain parts of the state. But so I think there are a lot of factors that would go into this, and it's not as though they're targeting some kind of perfect system, because a perfect system doesn't exist. I think the people who are bringing this up want something different than today, but I'm not sure that they know exactly what they want.
Well, John Hunter, had you heard concern over the drawing of legislative districts before this news came out that there was this proposed constitutional amendment?
Oh, yeah, very much. Uh-huh. And in fact, you can count on that like you can count on the sun coming up in the morning, mm-hmm. that every 10 years there are going to be disagreements about these lines. You know, and there have been, South Dakota has a decent law that says, you know, you kind of have to respect counties first. Now that, and you have to get to roughly equal number of people in these districts, but there is some latitude. And I remember, I must have been 15 years ago when Beetle County was divided directly into two, and where that line was drawn was favorable to someone and unfavorable to another. And that was, I remember that sparked a lot of debate and discussion about that. But mostly, if you play by the rules that are already in place and dividing that up, it's not extreme. There are other states, certainly, that are much worse as far as making these partisan districts. But there is enough flexibility in there that they can be jury-rigged to favor one political party over the other.
And, Roger Whittle, would this amendment help one of those parties, the Democrats?
Well, they're the ones who need it. It's hard to say. Like I say, John was talking about the problems that have been brought up in the past. I haven't heard any around here, so I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. The Democrats, I know, you know, are not really represented in our legislature, but is there enough Democrats out there to make that change? I don't know.
Well, because this is a measure to change the Constitution, nearly 28,000 signatures are needed to get the measure on the ballot. The number of signatures needed to change state statutes is about half that. Roger, do you think sponsors can get enough signatures to put this proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot?
I would think so. The Farmers Union is a pretty big organization in the state, and they will keep plugging at it until they get it done.
There are now two petition drives to put the issue of payday lending on the 2016 ballot. One, led by Sioux Falls businessman Steve Hildebrand, would cap interest rates at 36%. The other caps interest rates at 18%. But in that one, lenders could charge more if borrowers sign a contract agreeing to higher terms. Hildebrand says the second petition drive is an attempt to by payday lenders to undermine his group's efforts, and his group is South Dakotans for Responsible Lending. The new group has a nearly identical name, South Dakotans for Fair Lending. John Hunter, what's going on here?
I was hoping you could tell me, Carl. it's a moving target. This is changing kind of by the day and by the week, so much so that the industry is saying that if the first one passes, they all go out of business, all of them. And that ends that. And and people might argue that it provides a service in our state for people who can't get bank loans and need short-term, you know, what they call payday loans. And the reason they're called that is because we're just loaning the money until the next payday. But if you have these interest rates, which are set on an annual basis, a three-day loan is only, you know, less than 1/100th of a year. So you get 1/100th of the interest rate of 18 or 36 or whatever. So it's clearly a dynamic environment for this thing. We're a little ways away from 2016 ballot, but I would expect this thing to change every day between now and when those petitions are due.
Roger Whittle, are you following this story very closely?
I am. I have. It's interesting because these businesses are literally everywhere. Every town you go, seemingly every part of town, you see these businesses. And John's right. If they cap the rates at 36% annually, it is going to put them out of business because they loan money for a very short period of time, and if they're only getting a few cents back on their money, they're not going to stick around. And the fact that there are so many of these around tells me that people use them. So, you know, it's a big question. Do we get rid of them because they're supposedly predatory, or do we allow them so these people that can't get regular bank loans can survive payday to payday? It's interesting to see how this is going to work out.
Do you think, Roger, that this could become an ugly battle?
I don't know how ugly it'll get, because I think the only people that really would have money to start any kind of a campaign, television, TV, newspaper ads, would be the site of the the loan center. So I don't expect it to get necessarily ugly, but it'll be interesting.
John Hunter, how do you think this might play out?
Well, that's I like Roger's observation there, that who's going to really run with this, and if and I don't know who they are. Campaigns like this do need kind of grassroots efforts by lots of people in order to make this happen, not only petition drives, but votes after that, and campaigns that will convince people to vote. If you're uninformed on a particular issue, in South Dakota at least, it's common to vote no, that we prefer no change to change if we don't understand the issue. So I think it would require some people really to rally, and I don't see yet who those people are going to really carry that in big enough numbers to make a difference.
There are about a dozen other possible measures for the 2016 ballot, a number of petition drives out there. I've kind of lost count. I believe that two referrals have already gotten enough signatures to get on the 2016 ballot. Roger, do you think we're seeing more ballot measures than usual here?
It sure seems to be that way, and the fact that they've been successful and with the minimum wage, that it not only got it on the ballot, but they got it passed, I think that's going to encourage even more of this kind of thing in the future. So I would expect them not to go back to, you know, one every couple of years. I think we're going to be seeing more and more of them.
John,
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I concur. People are trying to say if we can't get our thing done through the legislature, then we're going to try something else. And that's, I think, frankly, a nationwide issue where, you know, people are going to courts more rather than through Congress and the president and so forth, that they'll choose whatever path. You know, if this one doesn't work, try another one and keep trying another one. So if this works in this case, and it has recently, then it probably would increase the number. And if it gets to be a point where it doesn't work anymore, then they would move on to something else, another path to take if these don't work.
Well, Roger, does there come a point when there are too many of these ballot initiatives? I know that some of these can get rather intricate and the meaning sometimes obscure. And what does it mean if you vote yes? What does it mean if you vote no? I mean, does it become a point when there's just too many of these and voters just say, I think you were talking about this a little bit earlier, that you get to a point where you just say, well, I'm just going to vote no, or I'm going to vote against this.
Right. I know nobody wants to go into the ballot box and spend, you know, 30 minutes reading 30 pages of these kind of things. What that point is, I don't know, but I know we had one of our local legislators who was actually supporting the measure last session to make it more difficult to bring these kind of things to ballot was saying, you know, eventually we won't need the legislature at all if we do this. We'll just put every issue out there to vote for everybody. And, you know, I'm not sure that's a that's necessarily a good thing either. But I think we're not there yet, point of too many, but I can certainly see it in, you know, 10, 20 years from now.
John?
Carl, let me add one other thing to that, if I may. And that is, there are some times when you'll have an issue on the ballot, at least I've seen this in other states, where two different initiatives are on the opposite sides of the same issue, and they both pass. So what do you do? And then it goes to courts, and it gets drawn out, and so forth. And so I think I don't want to completely bash the legislative process, because people kind of can get some perspective and realize that this affects something else that may be an unintended consequence, and you can kind of get those things. But it's certainly happened in California, where you'd have both sides of the issue have put something on the ballot and they both win.
Well, it sounds like that might be the strategy with the payday lending thing, where you've got two different takes on the payday lending issue.
It sure might.
Well, moving on from that aspect of our elections, Republican U.S. Senator John Thune has nearly $11 million in the bank for a possible reelection bid, although he hasn't announced. Thune's campaign manager has said that Thune is preparing for another run. Roger, does he need that much money for a reelection bid?
$11 million? he could probably get by with $11. I think he's sitting pretty well as far as money is concerned.
And John Hunter, you agree?
Well, yes. I don't think, you know, that will be used in this next campaign, whether it would be used for future campaigns, or I don't know the rules about giving it to other candidates and so forth, how that all goes. But it's way more than you would need. He may be unopposed again, and that's not a perfect situation for any state to have only one candidate run for an office. But I'm not aware of a challenger to him, and so I think John is very popular and would not need that much money.
Roger Whittle, have you heard any word on possible Democratic opponents?
I have not. This would be, the second election in a row he's been unopposed.
Right.
So, the time for the Democrat to get into the race was when there was an open seat. I don't think I'm not sure any of them would have been out there waiting. Well, I'll wait, not run for the open seat and wait to run against John Thune. That doesn't sound like a very good strategy to me.
Well,
he might very well be unopposed again.
Well, if there is a possible Democratic challenger, is there any reason that he would need to announce his candidacy anytime soon, or can he wait till next year, John Hunter?
I think he'd want to do it a little sooner. And again, I'm not aware of any candidates, but there was, Brendan Johnson's name came up last time, and he chose not to run. And they never say never on those kinds of things. He has since given up his federal position and working in the private sector, so that may be an easier place to run for an office. But I don't think you can throw in someone at the last minute and expect to compete very well. I think you'd want to get going with that modestly soon.
Roger Whittle, when do you think, not even just for the U.S. Senate race, also the House of Representatives race, how early do you think the Democratic challenger would need to announce that he's running?
Well, I agree with John. You can't wait till the last minute. You have to have some time to build some name recognition and, try to chip away at whatever it is that makes John Thune seemingly indestructible, and that can't be done overnight.
Do voters pay that much attention to House and Senate races yet this early, Roger?
Well, I think they do, because the minute a Democrat announces, you're going to be hearing about it constantly through every newspaper and every radio station, every TV station in the state. So I think they can't help but pay attention.
John Hunter, do you think that they pay attention this early?
I think you should run, Carl.
Oh, I'm not ready for that.
yes, I think, as Roger indicated, is they'll pay attention when there's something to pay attention to. Now, at the moment, I haven't heard of any of those, either the House or the Senate seat, and so I don't think there's anything to pay attention to. But if you had either a challenger, a primary challenger, or a general election challenger, then then people would be interested and they'd talk about it.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. John, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks, Carl.
And Roger, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks, John.